From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, it is Friday, August 30th. Good afternoon and welcome to this Friday edition of Washington Watch. I am your host, Jody Heiss, the Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council and President of FRC Action. All right, coming up on today's program, Kamala Harris's long-awaited sit-down interview with the press finally happened, and it's only been 40 days since she replaced Joe Biden as the top of the Democratic presidential ticket. And while the interview did take place with the left-friendly CNN, Harris was called out for flip-flopping on a number of policy issues. It was all an apparent attempt to appeal to voters.
Should they feel comfortable and confident that what you're saying now is going to be your policy moving forward?
Dana, I think the most important and most significant aspect of my policy perspective and decisions is my values have not changed.
Well, I would agree that's pretty significant that her values have not changed, but she might be hoping that American voters won't remember just how radical she is as she tries to distance herself from the radical Harris as vice president, or maybe the radical Harris as senator, or maybe the radical Harris as California attorney general. Whatever the case may be, I'll be joined in just a moment by Utah Congressman Burgess Owens to point out what the Harris-Waltz campaign is hoping Americans won't remember about her radical past. And while it's clear that Vice President Harris is not running on many specific policy proposals, there is absolutely one exception: abortion. And probably to her disappointment, that issue did not come up during the interview last night with CNN. But we do know that she wants to overturn pro-life laws all across the country. And there is one law that she absolutely wants, and that would be taxpayer-funded abortion on demand through all 9 months of pregnancy.
When Congress passes a bill to restore reproductive freedom, as President of the United States, I will proudly sign it into law.
Well, of course, that was Harris. That was during a campaign rally yesterday in Savannah, Georgia. And just today, she announced the launch of a Fighting for Reproductive Freedom bus tour. Well, we'll discuss this and more when I'm joined later in the program by FRC's David Clawson. And speaking of the life issue, more concerning remarks came out from former President Trump yesterday, this time regarding the battle for life in the state of Florida.
Florida, the state that you are a resident of, there's an abortion-related amendment on the ballot to overturn the six-week ban in Florida. How are you going to vote on that?
Well, I think the six-week is too short. It has to be more time, and so and I've told them that I want more weeks.
So you'll vote in favor of the amendment?
I am going to be voting that we need more than 6 weeks.
Well, that was President Trump fielding a question from an NBC News correspondent regarding Florida's Amendment 4, which will be on the ballot this November. The Trump campaign later clarified that President Trump has not yet said how he's going to be voting on that ballot initiative in Florida. He simply reiterated that he believes 6 weeks is too short. But Amendment 4 does a lot more than overturn the state's heartbeat bill. It will enshrine an absolute right to abortion up to birth in Florida's state constitution. Sounds like it should be clear to me, for anyone who considers himself to be pro-life, how they should be voting on that. We'll dive into the details of Amendment 4 when I'm joined by John Stenberger, president of Liberty Council Action, a little bit later. Also on today's program, I'll be joined by FRC's Kena Gonzalez to get a preview of Congress's forthcoming budget battle, where a culture war is also being waged. So we, as always, have a lot coming your way today. Our website, always keep in mind, TonyPerkins.com. You'll find there are lots of resources as well as archived programs should you need them. All right, let's jump into the specifics of today's program. It finally happened. After nearly 40 days, without giving the press any more than just a minute here and there, since she replaced Joe Biden as the top Democratic presidential ticket, Kamala Harris finally sat down with CNN's Dana Bash for a half-hour interview. But I might add, she was flanked by her running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. So how'd she do? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Congressman Burgess Owens. He's a member of the House Education and Workforce Committee, as well as the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. He represents the 4th Congressional District of the great state of Utah. Congressman Owens, always good to see you. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Jody. Looking forward to chatting with you, my friend, for sure.
Well, listen, I think there's probably very little that was revealed last night in regard to her specific policies, but there seems to be a lot that can be said about the interview as a whole. So let's start at the top. First question that she was asked, let me play this clip and then we'll go from there. Clip number three, please.
If you are elected, what would you do on day one in the White House?
Well, there are a number of things. I will tell you, first and foremost, one of my highest priorities is to do what we can to support and strengthen the middle class. When I look at the aspirations, the goals, the ambitions of the American people, I think that people are ready for a new way forward.
It sounds like she's kind of saying we want to move on from the Biden-Harris administration, but wouldn't her administration just be a continuation of the Biden administration?
Well, Joni, first of all, let me just say this. This is a great interview for our nation. Our nation's looking for leadership and what we're seeing here. And it's obvious from how long it's taking for you to do this. You know, keep in mind, we've been in this industry. We know what it is to go out and work hard to get people to trust us, to vote for us. I've been in the corporate world for 25 years in separate in sales. You know what an interview looks like. You're trying to put your best foot forward. You're trying to show wisdom, vision, the ability to think on your feet. And she has none of that. So I think for American people, this was a good moment. What happened the last time when Biden was hiding it all in the basement cannot happen again. Our American people need to have the very best opportunities to move forward. And Kamala obviously is not it. So, no, she is very, very shallow. The answer she gave never really pointed in terms of policies. I don't think she really understands the policies. And I'll just say this one thing that I think many of us can kind of look back over the last few years and realize where we are now. There was a time we were talking about participation trophies. There was a time we talked about affirmative action. And then, of course, lately, the DEI. There is a sense of entitlement that comes from all of those ideologies. An entitlement that says, I don't have to have merit. I don't have to be the very best in the room. I just need to be the right person, the right color, the right gender. That is not the American way. And we do it that way. We have a lot of pain coming our way. So, I'm very, very happy that American people had a chance to see this interview last night.
Good point. She actually admitted that Americans are struggling financially. And talked about some things that probably ought to be done. And naturally, Bash responded by saying, well, you've been part of this administration for 3.5 years now. You know, basically, why haven't you done anything about it? Play clip four.
You have been vice president for 3.5 years.
Yeah.
The steps that you're talking about now, why haven't you done them already?
Well, first of all, we had to recover as an economy, and we have done that. I'm very proud of the work that we have done that has brought inflation down to less than 3%.
I mean, come on. I mean, she's bragging about bringing inflation down, but it's still up significantly from where it was under Trump. What do you make of how this administration likes to compare itself? But we're at our worst. It's so much worse than what it was all like when she came into office.
Well, keep in mind, this has been a well-waited for interview. It's been, 40 plus days. The one thing that Kamala has a history of or a reputation is she does not like to work. She does not like to do the heavy lifting of preparation. And obviously, whatever they did to prepare for this conversation, this interview, she did not take it seriously, or she just cannot do the job. So no, they're gonna pivot immediately. Instead of the vision This is what happens with President Trump. Think about it. He's always talking to things he wants to do. He's being innovative. He thinks outside the box. At the end of the end of the day, with a conversation with the Trump-Vance ticket, is you're left with hope. You're left with the idea that this is not the way it has to be, that we could be so much better. And then you look at the kind of people that they put themselves around. This team of rivals that we're seeing with the Trumps is so exciting to me, because you have innovators, people that are bold, who have actually succeeded in life. And then you look at the Harris ticket. You have Waltz. I mean, I don't know who did the vetting for these guys, but my goodness, they should be fired, because they came in with a very flawed candidate who cannot admit that he's a liar. Pathological, and so we have to, again, it talks about the type of capability to find good people to surround yourself with, and that's another thing that Kamala has been very, very, very non-successful in doing, for sure.
Yeah, and you know, another thing that seemed to come out over and over and over in the interview was different areas in which Kamala Harris apparently now seems to be flip-flopping on, just from one issue to the other. In fact, she says, though, in the midst of all that, well, one thing, basically, in fact, it's a short clip, but we'll play clip 7 here in just a second. But basically, she says, yeah, though I may have flip-flopped on a bunch of stuff, one thing about me is my values haven't changed. Hit click 7, please.
Should they feel comfortable and confident that what you're saying now is going to be your policy moving forward?
Dana, I think the most important and most significant aspect of my policy perspective and decisions is my values have not changed.
All right, Congressman Owens, what are her values based on what you've seen?
Well, and that's a very good point. Her life is shown that she has no values. Her life is shown that her values for other people are a zero. You look at what's happened at the border, she can care less. I spent more time on the border as a congressman than she did as a vice president. And all you do is go down there and really and look and seek to ask the question. You see the misery of people going through. Her values are not about the people that she was willing to bail out of jail so they can go out and burn more of the black community down. Her values are not the fact that we have inflation that she is part of. And here's the thing. If you don't understand policies, it's very easy to do anything and not be held accountable for it. She's responsible for this inflation. And because she doesn't understand how inflation works, she doesn't understand how business works, how a return on investment works, that in the grocery business, there's a margin of 1.4%, which is not price gauging or gouging. She doesn't understand this, and she's not willing to do the heavy lifting to work, to mentally put her time into it. So, no, we don't need lazy people in this office. We don't need small people. And let me just say one other thing. The one thing that I saw about this interview is how small she looked, her presence. Another thing I saw, and again, I've been around in the corporate world forever, for 25 years, a business owner for longer than that. I look for certain things. When I shake somebody's hands, I see if there's a strength there. I see if people are willing to look me in the eye and be engaged. She has none of that. And I haven't met Kamala, but I have a feeling when I shake her hand, it will be very weak. That is not what we need as leadership. Any of us who've been around people, been around leadership, knows those are sure signs that they should not be in control of anything of worthwhile. So this Absolutely. Is a very, very, very good conversation we had, and I'm looking forward to more people seeing it, for sure.
Likewise. Thank you so much, Congressman Burgess Owens of Utah. Always an honor to have you on the program. Thank you for all you're doing for your great state and our country. Glad to have
Jody,
you on
thank
the
you
program.
For the work. Thank you for the work and your service, my friend. I appreciate you big time. All the best.
Thank you. All right, after the break, we're going to be talking about Florida's Amendment 4 and the opportunity for some to enshrine abortion in that state. Don't go anywhere. You don't want to miss this. We'll be back.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Jody Heiss. Glad to be with you today. All right, this November, Floridians have an opportunity to shine, literally, as the pro-life haven of America when voters decide whether or not Amendment 4 gets added to the state constitution. Now, that's the amendment to limit government interference with abortion. What a mouthful. Now, if that name sounds bad, well, just hold on, because the proposed amendment itself is even worse than the name. And here to tell us more about it is John Stemberger. He's the president of Liberty Council Action and former president of the Florida Family Policy Council. John, welcome back to Washington Watch. Thank you for joining us.
Jody, great to be with you again.
All right. Now, for those in our audience right now who are not in Florida, tell us what Amendment 4 is, what it's all about.
So this is an extreme and deceptive constitutional amendment that is being proposed for our state constitution. It will appear on the ballot in Florida on November 5th, along with the presidential election. It has been funded and contrived by the same suspects that's done this all around the country. So George Soros, the ACLU, Planned Parenthood, and others formed a coalition. They spent $12 million just getting the petitions to get this on the ballot. But it is very, very dangerous. If this passes in Florida, it will be permanent. The legal pro-life amendment will be pro-life movement will be over. We'll still have pregnancy centers. We'll still have advocacy, and we'll still have education. But this will basically shut every single pro-life law down and challenge everything that exists, including health and safety standards, parental consent, whether a doctor should do an abortion or not. It will allow public funding of abortions. It's just an extreme amendment that definitely Joe Lunchbuck, even pro-choice voters, pro-abortion rights voters, they will not support this if they really understood the impact of it.
All right. Well, so what you just said raised all kinds of questions for me. I want to go back and have you really repeat one part of what you said. If this thing passes, it enshrines abortion. It totally does away with every other legislative codification, if we will, of pro-life positions. Is that correct?
That's right. Our parental consent law would be overturned and challenged. Our 24-hour waiting period that requires a woman to reflect for 24 hours before they take the life of their unborn child, a permanent and irreversible decision, that will go by wayside. The regulations on chemical abortions requiring a doctor to administer these very powerful poisonous drugs will be gone. Because the problem is this, Jody, once you enshrine something as a fundamental right on par with freedom of speech or freedom of religion, any law that burdens that activity is automatically struck down unless they can show that there's a compelling state interest, narrowly tailored, blah, 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 all these legal jargon. The bottom line is that we've seen this play out in Ohio, where a similar amendment passed out just literally days ago. They struck down their 24-hour waiting period. There's also a parental consent challenge being had in Ohio and in Michigan, where a very radical amendment like this passed. In Michigan, they're saying that because now abortion is a fundamental right, that the law prohibiting public funding of abortion through Medicaid should also give way. So again, it's just going to be a free-for-all, an abortion up almost through the entire pregnancy at any stage if this amendment passes. It is radical, it is extreme, and it is something very deceptive, the language when it's worded.
Well, let me hit on some of that deception, because you said even those that support abortion would not vote in favor of this if they understood what was in it. So that says two things to me. It says, number one, there is a lot of deception, a lot of lies probably that are being told about Amendment 4 and what it really does. So I'd like to know what are some of the lies that are being told about it, and what needs to happen to adequately inform the voters of Florida?
Yeah. Well, the first part of the amendment summary says no law shall prohibit, penalize, delay, or restrict abortion before viability. Now, this sounds like Roe versus Wade. This sounds like a compromise. This sounds like after viability, the state could then regulate, provide some restrictions for abortion. So this sounds like where middle America is, right? No law shall prohibit, penalize, delay, or restrict abortion before viability. In the focus group, some people just read the word viability and they thought, oh, this is a pro-life amendment. Let me vote for it. Pro-lifers did that. The problem is the second part, which is or when necessary to protect the patient's health as determined by a healthcare provider. So the problem with this is the word health, Jody, has been very broadly construed. The same day that Roe versus Wade was decided, a case called Doe versus Bolton was decided. It's a U.S. Supreme Court case, a hospital abortion case. And the U.S. Supreme Court defines health extremely broadly. And they basically said it includes all factors including mental, physical, emotional, psychological, familiar, and even a woman's age. The Supreme Court then goes on to use the World Health Organization's definition of health as well. They cite to that, which is a complete state of physical, mental, and social well-being. Well, any mental stress, and when a woman is pregnant, she has all kinds of issues that affect her health in some way. There's back pain, there's fatigue, there's nausea, cramping, depression sometimes. So basically, this amendment would allow abortion for any symptom that's necessary as a matter of being pregnant. So it's extremely broad, extremely radical, and it talks about the healthcare provider. They could have used the word doctor, Jody. They didn't. There's a reason they didn't use the word physician. They used the word healthcare provider. There's no definitions at all in this amendment, which is the biggest problem of all. You know, when we had our medical marijuana amendment here, it was four pages of definitions. Even our pregnant pig amendment, which prohibits killing pregnant pigs, had like six definitions. This amendment has no definitions of all, and it's done on purpose so you can deceive people. There's four places in Florida law where healthcare provider is defined, and only one of them involves any doctors. The other one has like dental technicians and massage therapists and all these different things, school counselors. So basically anyone, especially abortion clinic workers, will be able to determine whether a woman's health is burdened enough to protect it by getting an abortion. So this is a very extreme amendment. It's deceptive, and it's not what it seems at all.
All right. For all of you who are watching and or listening in Florida, or those of you who know people in Florida, this is the time to step up and vote no on Amendment 4. But get others informed real quickly. Is there a website people can follow this, John?
You can go to lcaction.org, lcaction.org. Okay. We can take them.
John, John Stenberger, yes. President of Liberty Counsel Action, thank you so much for keeping us informed on this. All right, after the break, Congress is coming back. We've got a lot of fiscal issues to deal with and a culture war as well. Stay tuned.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Thank you so much for tuning in today. All right, September is just around the corner, just a couple of days away. And what that means is that Congress is going to be returning to Washington. But they're only going to be there for about 3 weeks, and that's how long Congress will be in session before the election. And so what they have before them is $6 trillion worth of federal budgeting that has to be renewed. All I can say is taxpayers, buckle up. September is coming, and it's not going to be pretty. Well, here to talk about the battle ahead is Kana Gonzalez. He's a senior director of government affairs here at the Family Research Council. Kana, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Jody.
All right. So I want to talk to you about this. I'm well familiar with it as well. Congressional spending. And because Congress comes back to Washington in 2 weeks and they're going to be dealing with all these 12 spending bills. Obviously, that's going to be among the top priorities. But the legacy media is already claiming that Republicans are inserting unnecessary culture war issues into the appropriation process. So is that accurate?
The short answer is no, Jody. They are not inserting culture war issues into the budgeting process, into the spending process. What they're doing is responding to Democrats' overreach over the last 4 years. Remember, the Biden-Harris administration has been in charge in the White House and setting the agenda for the entire executive branch. Democrats control the Senate by a very comfortable margin. And in the House, the Republicans have a razor-thin margin. So Democrats have gotten away with a lot in Washington in the last 4 years. And what Republicans in the House, conservatives in the House, are trying to do is pull back on some of that government overreach, especially as it relates to protecting the unborn, protecting women, and protecting youth.
Yeah, I mean, that really is the case. The other side, Kana, they are masterful at accusing others, and in most cases, accusing Republicans of the very things that they themselves are guilty of doing. And here in this case, when they're accusing Republicans of inserting culture war issues into the budgeting process, That's exactly what they're doing, but through earmarks, through various amendments in the appropriation process. You mentioned a few of them, but are there other type things that Democrats have inserted into the appropriations process that you find extremely alarming and concerning?
Oh, yes. And I'll give you a rundown in a moment. But I just wanted to go back to what the congressman said at the top of the show, that values, Kamala Harris is trying to make this election about values. And if you want to know what values the Democrats really espouse, look at where they want to spend your money. Some earmarks. We counted 9 earmarks so far that we have found and documented, including $5.5 million being set aside for hospitals and medical organizations that perform later term abortions or chemical abortions. $3 million for organizations that promote false sexual identities like LGBT directly to youth. Almost $4.5 million to organizations like women's shelters that prey on gender confusion to force women to share vulnerable spaces with biological males that identify as female. Those are just some of the earmarks that we found so far. We've counted 38 amendments so far, particularly in the House, just because of the way the House and the Senate are operating differently this appropriation season. Most of the earmarks are in the Senate. Most of the amendments are from Democrats in the House. And I won't go through all nearly 40 amendments that we found, but some categories that we found, there are multiple amendments discriminating against Americans based on their belief that life begins in the womb, or discriminating against Americans who still believe that that marriage is or should be between one man and one woman. These are Democrat amendments that will weaponize the federal government against Americans. Amendments that allow the government to continue and expand paying for gender transition procedures, paying for and subsidizing abortions and the destruction of human life, paying for abortion advocacy here and overseas. It's just amazing. Sometimes we have some bold friends in the House of Representatives and in the Senate who stand for life, stand for marriage, and stand for conservative values, but not enough. And it seems like there are many, many, many more Democrats who are very willing to stand boldly for their values.
Well, there you listed, my jaw is wide open while you're mentioning some of those things, Kane. It's unbelievable. There is so much to discuss on this appropriations process. It's a complicated process. It's a time-consuming process. But I don't want our audience to get lost in the weeds of all of this. Where can they go to learn more about the process and just to kind of keep a pulse of what's going on?
Absolutely, Jody. So there is an article up today at the Washington Stand at WashingtonStand.com where you can look and see how our research has turned up so far, all of these amendments and earmarks. We will be, rest assured, we will continue to be following the appropriations process and unearthing these kinds of scandals and bringing them to light so that the American people can see what Democrat priorities are, what their real values are.
All right. Again, that's WashingtonStand.com. I want to encourage you to go check it out. And you can stay there and continue going back to that site throughout the appropriations process. Thank you, Kaina Gonzalez, Senior Director here at the Family Research Council Government Affairs. We appreciate your incredible work, and thank you for joining us today.
Great to be with you, Jody.
All right. After the break, we're going to have our weekly worldview conversation with David Clawson. Boy, we've got a lot to talk about, so don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a moment.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical,
and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. So glad to have you on board. I can't believe that we've gone this far in the program, and I have yet to remind you that our Pray, Vote, Stand Summit is coming up. It's going to be taking place in Washington, D.C. on October 3rd through the 6th. And again, as I've said all week, we would love to have you come join us. Want to encourage you to visit PrayVoteStand.org for more information and to register today. We look forward to seeing you. And also, I want to encourage you to make your voice heard with Family Research Council's 2024 election survey. I know you're concerned about the direction our country is headed, and we want to hear from you about the major issues that you believe are facing our country, and we want to help just give wind to that sail and help move our country back in the right direction. You can participate in the survey by texting the word election to 67742, and you'll be directed from there how to participate in that survey. All right. As we've discussed today on the program, former President Trump's recent comments about abortion has attracted a lot of attention. And in addition, earlier today, the Harris-Waltz ticket announced their nationwide reproductive freedom bus tour is scheduled to make over 50 stops in various swing states. So, how should Christians be responding to all these developments? Well, joining me now for our weekly Biblical Worldview segment is David Clawson. He's the director of the Center for Biblical Worldview at the Family Research Council. David, thanks again for joining us. Good to have you.
Great to be with you, Jody.
Okay, we have a lot to cover, David. Let's start off with the news that came out today that I just mentioned. Kamala Harris announced the Fighting for Reproductive Freedom bus tour. What are your thoughts about this so-called campaign tactic?
Well, in an election that has had a lot of surprising turns, Jody, this might be the most predictable. I think abortion might be the only issue that Kamala Harris actually has a longstanding conviction on. And of course, that's regrettable. I don't say that with any glee. But she has been the most energetic supporter of abortion to ever lead a major party ticket. We've talked about her record before, Jody. I think some of the most egregious examples is when she, for her days when she was a U.S. senator voting against the Born Alive Survivor Protection Act. Jody, Kamala Harris had an opportunity to vote on legislation that would give babies who survive botched abortions legal protections. She voted against it. She twice, actually. She's also had opportunities when she was a U.S. senator to vote in favor of legislation that would provide protections to babies at the point that they can feel pain. She voted against it. Whenever, as a senator, she had an opportunity to make her voice and opinion known on abortion, she was always one of the most energetic supporters of abortion. Going even back, Jody, to her time as Attorney General of California, you remember when those undercover videos showed that Planned Parenthood was selling baby body parts? Instead of investigating Planned Parenthood, she went after the investigators who had unearthed this material. And of course, her pick for vice president, you know, of all the Democrats she could choose from, she chose Tim Walz, who's the first governor in America after Roe was overturned, to make sure that abortion was legal through all 9 months of pregnancy. And he removed protections in state law that afforded protection to babies who survived a botched abortion. So, you know, Jody, this, I'm not surprised. The only thing I'm, you know, maybe surprised about is that they said, I think there's like 65 days left in the election. I'm surprised they're not trying to do even more stops, because this seems to be the animating issue of the Kamala Harris campaign.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And I'm glad you brought up, because I mentioned it actually earlier in the program, that she has given us a lot of material from her true values that she says she is not forsaking. As vice president, as senator, as California attorney general, there is a lot of material there for us to determine what her values are. And it's clear that although she's not running, at least not clearly, on any specific policy, the one exception is abortion. Yeah. But unfortunately, David, she's not alone on making news on that topic. And I just got to bring this up. I want to show a little clip, but just yesterday, former President Trump made some comments that have received a lot of attention. So let me play clip two here and then get your response to it.
Florida, the state that you are a resident of, there's an abortion-related amendment on the ballot to overturn the six-week ban in Florida. How are you going to vote on that?
Well, I think the six-week is too short. It has to be more time, and so that's—and I've told them that I want more weeks.
So you'll vote in favor of the amendment?
I'm voting that—I am going to be voting that we need more than 6 weeks.
All right. Voting on needing more than 6 weeks is not on the ballot. So your response to that?
Donald Trump is not in danger of losing pro-life voters to Kamala Harris, but he is in danger, Jody, of depressing the pro-life vote. I think, you know, again, pro-life voters are not going to vote for Harris, but some of them, because of comments like that, they might sit out the election. You're not going to get the pro-life base knocking on doors, making calls, donating to your campaign when President Trump continues to undermine, again, the core base of his supporters. You know, it's interesting, even in that clip, Jody, you know, President Trump has now for months been saying he thinks abortion should be a state issue. And again, we could talk about that particular position. But even now, he's, you know, undermining his own position because that six-week protection law in Florida was passed by the state legislature. And so if this truly is a state issue, you would think that the president would then support Florida's law. And so, Jody, let me just say this. As someone, I'm a pro-life Christian. I take my cues from Scripture. You know, I'm someone who thinks that a Harris administration would be an unmitigated disaster for the pro-life cause. But my plea, Jody, to the Trump campaign would be this. President Trump, Senator Vance, you don't need to go all the way with where I would go, where I stand and what my convictions are. But you can't keep undermining the core of your base. You can't keep undermining the people who are wanting to vote for you, people who remember your 4 years in office as being the most pro-life administration in American history. And my fear, Jody, is, and Jody, you know, comments like that and tweets that he's put out recently about how his administration will be good for reproductive rights, who does he think that that is going to appeal to? The Harris campaign on this bus tour, they're already going to try, no matter what President Trump says, to paint him as an extremist. And so this type of language, Jody, all it does is depress the very people that want to vote for him. And so my fear is if this kind of language is just going to fumble on this issue, and in a base election, Jody, this isn't going to bode well. So I really hope the president will correct course on this.
Well, I hope he was listening to you, and I hope the campaign was listening to you. But, you know, this is one of those issues very, very, very clearly goes beyond politics. This is a clear biblical worldview issue. And it's part of my prayer that Christians would keep that in mind and just not be taken away with the politics involved here. Before we move on, I have one more question for you on this topic of abortion. Earlier in the program today, I had John Stemberger on to talk about the specifics of Amendment 4 there in Florida, and you're a native of Florida. So what would be your encouragement right now to pastors in the state of Florida who are tracking this topic and who are hopefully considering weighing in?
Yeah, my encouragement to pastors, Jody, and it's true, as a resident of Florida for over 20 years, is to preach to the issue. Again, the reason we're pro-life is not because any political party told us to or a platform dictates that to us. We're pro-life because God's pro-life. You know, we're pro-life because the Bible's pro-life. We have passages like Psalm 139 and Luke 1 and elsewhere. We have doctrines like the image of God and the value of every single life, born and unborn. You know, Jody, we did research here at the Family Research Council in our Center for Biblical Worldview a year after the Roe decision was overturned by the Dobbs decision. And I was surprised to find out only 44% of churchgoers, regular churchgoers, said that they had heard a sermon on abortion in the year that Roe was overturned. What's interesting, though, Jody, is 71% of regular churchgoers told us they greatly desired for their pastor to preach and teach on abortion. And so, you know, John Stemberger, I think he outlined really well for us the problems with Amendment 4. And so, again, if I'm a pastor in Florida, I'm not necessarily speaking about Amendment 4 and telling people exactly what to do, but I'm preaching to the issue, and I'm making sure people understand what a vote for and what a vote against that amendment would do. And again, we're pro-life not because the GOP or a pollster tells us to be. We're pro-life because God's pro-life.
Great point. All right, if I can, David, I'd like to switch topics on you. Of course, a lot of noise today about the Harris-Waltz, supposed to be Harris, but turned into the Harris-Waltz joint interview last night on CNN. And Kamala Harris was pushed on some issues that she's flip-flopped on. So what stood out to you most in that interview?
Well, it's so interesting, Jody. You know, it's been 39 days since, and I call it a political coup, honestly, when Joe Biden was kind of kicked off the ticket, even though he won all the votes. It's been 39 days since she's been the standard bearer for her party. And this was her first interview. And even then, she needed her vice president, you know, running mate to sit with her. So, which, by the way, he didn't really contribute a whole lot in the interview. I think for me, and
neither did she, I might say.
Well, that's, as far as substance goes, that's true. And I got to give credit where credit's due, Jody. I thought Dana Bash did a pretty good job of asking pointed questions and showing Kamala Harris, you previously have said this on fracking or the Green New Deal or decriminalizing illegal entry into the country. You know, why have you changed, or is there something that prompted your change? And I think this is going to be something, Jody, all of us should be looking out for. This seems to be her new tagline: "My values have not changed." That seems to kind of be her pivot, her block and bridge, so to speak, when she's asked a question that she doesn't want to answer. She just talks about how her values have not changed. And so I think that's something looking forward, Jody, that, again, I hope other people that have opportunity, I bet there won't be many, but that really press her on some of these policy positions. Because, again, you followed this even longer than I have, Jody, but I don't know of a presidential campaign that lacks so much. There's just not substance. And I didn't see much of that from that interview last night.
No, the substance is just totally, I hate to go back to it, but the substance all orbits around one issue, and that is abortion. You get away from that, and any degree of substance or specific conversation about policies is all vague. And like you just mentioned, it's all around comments like, well, my values have not changed. Well, what are your values? And how do those values translate into specific policies, which is what a worldview does?
Yes.
Everything that we believe and act upon is the direct result of a worldview that we embrace. So she can say, my values have not changed. And if that's true, which I believe it is true, that would mean her policies are going to be a continuation of the type of policies we have seen under the Biden-Harris administration for the last 3.5 years, which is continued radical, left-wing, secular, unbiblical policies on one issue after another. Am I just taking that too far?
I don't think so, Jody. And again, in this segment today, I'm not happy with any of the candidates right now. But again, as Christians, we need to be discerning voters. And, you know, one of my theological heroes, Al Mohler, he has a daily podcast where he talks about these issues. And he made the point a couple of days ago that, you know, when it comes to an election, you're looking at personalities, but you're also looking at policies, you're looking at platforms, and you're also looking at record. And when it comes to the top of the ticket, as of now, Jody, you know, despite it seems the Trump campaign's attempt to almost undermine their own record, there are clear records. It's been a long time in this country that we had a former president who has a 4-year record to compare to an incumbent vice president who has a 3.5-year record. And so, again, I think it's so important. We've said this before, Jody, you know, when you look at that ballot, there are no perfect choices. You know, sometimes I've heard people say, well, when confronted with two evils, you know, can't choose either. Well, again, whether you're voting for county dog catcher or president, you're always voting between the lesser of two evils. And so let's look at the policies. Right. Let's look at the records. Let's look at the personalities. As Christians, Jody, we're not exempt. We have to do all the work.
And get as close as we can to the candidate that stands for biblical values. Last question, and we've only got a little over a minute left here, but as we head into this Labor Day weekend, I know the Center for Biblical Worldview has a lot of projects in the works. Anything in particular that we should know about as we enter into the fall?
Yeah, frc.org/worldview is the site where we put all of our resources, Jody. I have booklets on there right now that deal with the religious liberty, sexuality, abortion, politics. How should Christians think through those issues biblically, but also what has church history contributed? Those are available right now in Spanish and in English and some other languages, actually. And then towards the end of the year, Jody, my colleague and I, Lainey Greer, PhD grad from Southern Seminary, we have a children's curriculum, 160 lessons that look at historical theology, systematic theology, biblical theology, and apply it to a kind of 10 to 12-year-olds. So frc.org/worldview is the place you can find all those resources.
Outstanding. Well, I don't mean to flatter you, but I will. I am actually going to be teaching a biblical worldview class at our church beginning in late September, and I'm going to be using some of your material. I can assure you that is excellent. Excellent stuff. Thank you, David Clawson, director at FRC's Center for Biblical Worldview. Always great to have you for this worldview segment.
Thank you, Jody. God bless.
God bless you as well. All right, friends. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. It's going to be a long weekend. Hope you enjoy it with family and friends. As always, I want to thank you for joining us for yet another week here on Washington Watch, and we look forward to being with you again next week. God bless you. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.